Okay, we're ready to start. Full house. Okay, this is a year in review for the Linux SIFS client. This is only partially Samba related, obviously. I work closely with the Samba people. And I'll explain why we have monster puppies and funky weasels in here. I even had a picture, but we just crashed that here. Before we start, let me explain who I am. I've been involved in SIFS and SMB as long as anyone, probably the oldest dinosaur here, even older than Tridge in that regard. I started working with my first file server back in 1988, before I started at IBM, and worked on various releases of OS2. I was the lead for the server parts of OS2. I was the maintainer of the OS2 client, one of the bigger, probably the biggest of the clients at the time. And I was the co-author of the SNIA SIFS specification. And when I started working on Linux, I thought about, well, you know, I've done all these other kind of architecture roles. What do I know best, though, when I start on Linux? Because, you know, Linux, where's Jeremy Allison? Jeremy Allison used to always quote that the only currency is code, so it doesn't do any good to say you're an architect or to say, look, I've done this for 20 years. I know more than you. They want to see the code. So what did I know best? Well, I know file systems, network file systems. So I started out not trying to kill you guys. Okay, I'm going to switch this. I apologize for not having a shirt with a collar, but American Airlines has my bags now, somewhere in London. Apparently, Heathrow is a place you don't want to send your bags through. Now, I thought this would be a fairly easy task, take maybe 6 months, a year. Well, it's been, 6 years later? I don't know, 5 years later. And this thing is going to keep growing. One of the things that provides me a lot of comfort is that the NFS guys seem to have even more trouble. They have four or five guys, quite smart, working on their client. Now, in the last year especially, there have been a lot more contributions from the community on the SIFS client, which has helped a lot. Let's see. You know, we have to talk about why SIFS. SIFS has been around a long time. But one of the things that's fascinating is it still is full function as NFS version 4 in the big picture. We have some gaps now with NFS version 4.1, but SIFS is a very interesting protocol. And it's ubiquitous. You know, how many of you guys have been into Fry's in the last week and seen all the little SIFS appliances? How many guys notice that SIFS is used in so many little hidden corner applications? Now, what are the customers asking for? They're asking for full local remote transparency. And I want to emphasize this because as file system developers, we never took this seriously. Back in the OS2 days and the DOS days, we tried to get pretty good. You know, we can do most of these N21 calls, but it's not good enough. It's got to be everything. When the customers mount SIFS, they can't spell SIFS. They can't spell SMB. They need absolutely perfect semantics. It's got to look like local. We got to think more like cluster file system developers in this regard. And of course, this is why network file systems proceed at a glacial pace, at least apparently to the users. When you look at Sun, it's been about 10 years between every Sun NFS release, roughly. 10 years. And that seems slow, but that's not because they didn't know what they wanted to improve. It's because getting anything halfway right with a network file system takes about 10 years. A little bit faster maybe with Linux. Now, what are the alternatives? We know about NFS version 3, and I think anybody who has been to the Linux Symposium, whose shirt I'm advertising at the moment, a couple years ago, Olaf Kirk, who was the NFS maintainer for SUSE, gave a wonderful talk, Why NFS Sucks, and I don't want to steal his talk, but I think all of NFS version 3's disadvantages are well known, and NFS v4 shares enough of them to be painted by the same brush. I've gone through a lot of that in a presentation I did last year at Linux Symposium. Well, we know that AFS and DFS are largely dead. Linux has an implementation of AFS, and AFS is still actively maintained, but not seriously considered for most workloads. And we all know about the HTTP performance problems that we've seen, because we probably all suffered like I did trying to download things from the web last night and wondering why it was so slow. And cluster file systems would be very appealing, removing a lot of the workloads that that NFS is used for today, if there were standards for this. Now let's talk about the components. When I talk about SIFS, the kernel component, I'm talking about SIFS.ko, and notice the things in dark blue there are things that I maintain with help of various people like Jeff Layton and Simo and a couple guys on my team, and then some other volunteers from smaller companies. The Samba pieces are obviously colored more green now, and the OS pieces, you can see the applications and kernel are colored differently as well. This is more so you can help find them. SIFS.ko is in the kernel tree, mount.sifs, SIFS.spnego, and SIFS, well, SIFS Resolver will be in the Samba tree. SIFS.spnego and mount.sifs are in the client directory of Samba, and SIFS.ko is in the kernel. So I give you these components just so you have an idea that that most of what we're talking about here is actually part of the kernel, not part of Samba code. The Samba pieces are much, much smaller. And they're optional. Now, let's talk about status. What's changed in the last year? Now, this was a slide, more or less, I presented last year. Last year, we were nocturnal monster puppies. By the way, how many of you guys have a nocturnal monster puppy at home? Do any of you guys have one? I don't mean your children. I mean some sort of wild animal that barks at 2 in the morning and keeps you up like my dog did a few weeks ago. Okay, last year at this time, we were at SIFS version 1.48. We were kernel 2.6.21. You know, it's funny because I'm sure that appears recent. And how many of you guys are running Linux at the moment? Okay, so a good chunk of you. How many of you guys are running a kernel newer than 2.6.21? Hey, so this is an unusual. This is better than OLS. This is better than Linux Symposium. That's very unusual. I think this box, his native kernel is 2.6.22. I'm running 2.6.25. This presentation is given on a kernel that was released yesterday. So I thought I was strange, but I guess everybody else is stranger. Okay, so 2.6.21 was nocturnal monster puppy. Some of the things that happened in the previous year that I talked about last time that I don't want to go into much detail, the much improved POSIX locking that Jeremy and I worked on, and of course earlier than that the POSIX ACL, STATFS, LSADDER, a lot of this Unix emulation was added that previous year. SMB client a year ago had included a new test code for POSIX locking and the POSIX open on link makedir. HPUX had also added some useful Unix extension work. Sun was at that time blogging about their new kernel SIFS client. And you know, we had just released on the server side 3.0.25 with this POSIX code. Now that's what I talked about last year, so I don't want to go into that. But what's happened this year? Well, this year we're now at Funky Weasels. And I don't unfortunately have any funky weasels in my yard. I do have possums though, and so maybe I could have gotten a picture of that for you guys. I may have a picture somewhere of that if you want to see one. I have no idea why it is Jiggy Widget, but there must be some story behind that that I forgot to Google for. But this is actually what the kernel makefile for Linux says today. This current SIFS version is 1.52. Of course, SMB client, I think Jeremy is going to talk a little about the server changes, but SMB client 3.0.28 includes DFS support and you know, we've got this per TCON encryption that that I think Jeremy's going to talk about in his talk. And during my presentation at the Google SIFS conference, Sun guys mentioned they're working on an in-kernel SIFS server. It's nice to see that because there haven't been very many of these. For some reason in NFS, they assume putting the NFS server in kernel is good, but we've always thought that was bad. I, obviously coming from the OS2 side where we had a very tightly written assembler SMB server, you know, 100,000 lines of code of assembler. This seemed like a perfectly normal thing to do. So they announced that. That's exciting. I haven't seen much about it since, but I'm curious about this. And of course, we are very appreciative of the huge amounts of Microsoft documentation. Matter of fact, we were talking about that last night with some of the things, some of the flags and things that we had misnamed. Fortunately, nothing that broke any code, but some things that will help a lot in the future. But there is one obstacle. I can only read so fast. Look, I have a graduate degree, and I was a double major in English, but this is 40,000 lines of code, guys. Now, in college, you know, you have to read for classes, right? And you complain because there's a Dickens novel that's 800 pages, right? And all the students complain about it. This is 40,000 pages, and it's a lot less exciting than Dickens. Well, exactly. Well, I mean, writing an OLS presentation, which is, you know, about as evil an audience as the audience that's probably reading the Microsoft documentation, that's looking for you to be embarrassed, right? Writing an OLS presentation for 20 pages takes a few months. So, I mean, this would take an army of 300 or 400 people to do this, and probably did. Okay. Now, on the server side, this isn't a server presentation, but I've got to talk about this. This has been the year of the cluster. And for me as a client developer, this is very exciting. I have always felt that SMB could be better in performance than NFS because of its lack of RPC layer and easier efficiencies on the server side. But what I've been amazed at is some of the clustering work. And I think you all have seen some of the movies that Tridge has done of the CTDB enablement. I mean, it's not just for performance, but this has been very exciting for me to watch. And you know, as I walk in, Ronnie is talking about what additional extensions we could do. And I'm very interested in that, because if we can expose better CTDB features, we can expose some of the clustering information in a little bit better way than the DFS referral information does today, that means we can fail over more intelligently, we can load balance more intelligently. And I look at what Sun has done with parallel NFS in the NFS version 4.1 spec, and I think we can do better than that. And I think we are doing better than that, actually. So I'm very excited about that. And you know, I like the Unix extensions keeping going. I like us keeping driving the protocol forward. But I don't want to forget that clustering is very important. And from my perspective, the other thing that's been very important for Samba is the server is faster than it was. And receive file is going to help a lot as well. That the receive file, by the way, Samba, Jeremy added code for this a few months ago. What it allows you to do is read directly from your read directly off the socket and stick it in the file descriptor, sort of the opposite of send file. We've done send file for a long time. Receive file is extremely useful. Now, last year at this time, I gave some summary statistics, right? We had over 100 change sets hitting one module. That's fairly high. It's similar to NFS, and by far the two most active file systems are those two, right? These are 100 sets of changes. Now, this is a very small file system because we have guys like Alvero that send you hate mail that make you remove one extra line of code or condense a 20-line function into 10 lines or, you know, merge functions. You know, if this were done in OS2, this would be, you know, 150,000 lines of code because we wouldn't have cared about that redundancy elimination. But it does make it easier to maintain. Now, there's lots of helper stuff outside this, but I'm still constantly amazed at how small this was. If you compare with the DOS implementation, it's actually about the size of the DOS implementation. But, you know, 10 times the function. It's kind of neat. Now, last year we had improved the IOZone performance, spectacularly improved it actually like 100-fold in one case, and then added these various POSIX locking, lock canceling, NTLM v2 support. We fixed up some of the older server support, mostly due to, where's Cooks? Oh, you were bugging me over and over again, in a good way. Added deep tree mounts so you could mount //server/share/some directory as your root rather than just //server/share. The makedir, I thought it was fascinating that you can just, with minor changes, you can make makedir more than twice as fast. That was kind of neat. So this was what we fixed last year, what we did last year. But what about this year? Well, unfortunately, we're doing more. So we went from just over 100 to 195 change sets that came from 44 different developers. Now this is just one module, guys, one module. I mean, we're talking like, imagine if CTDB had 44 developers changing it, right? It's kind of amazing. It's about 10% larger, but a third of it was rewritten, which is kind of interesting. Now, the biggest features from the client side were Simo and Jeff wrote this experimental Kerberos support. Now, when I talk about these lines of code number, I'm not talking about the user space stuff that that helps out with this. Experimental DFS support was added. There's one remaining patch for that. I mean, the patch is complete, but it didn't pass the ugly test. It's got a little bit more work to do before we can get Al to agree to not throw stones at it and Christoph. We added SIFS-ACL support so you can query the mode by querying the SIFS-ACL, and vice versa. You can use Chmod to change the mode by changing the SIFS-ACL. IPv6 support was added in the bar at Samba XP last year. I think we saw those pictures. That was kind of interesting. So Dr. Holder and I were doing that last year at Samba XP after my talk at the party at Samba XP. There's still some patches that I've got to integrate of his to fix some of the user space parsing of this. And so I will come back on some of the patches. POSIX semantics have improved. There have been a lot of small fixes. One of the bigger ones that people seem to like is this idea of being able to override the UID on mount. You could always override the UID on mount, but we never allowed you to override the UID if you were mounted to Samba. We'd only allow you to do it if you're mounting to Windows. But it turns out that in most cases, people don't have WinBind set up properly to have all of their servers have the same UIDs everywhere. I just assume people always use WinBind and always had had an LDAP server set up and always had UID mappings, but in practice, we have to override that. We had an option to turn off permission checking on the client that helped in some of those cases, but that little tiny change seemed to make a lot of difference. We also allow you to disable the Unix extensions if you don't want. There's a couple of reasons for this. One is that there have been some buggy implementations of the Unix extensions. But another reason is that sometimes people don't want the symlink support and don't want the UID mappings and those sorts of things. The pipe open over IPC dollar was something the Wine team requested at the Google conference last year, and most of the code is done for that. But that'll be in 2.6.26. I made the changes last summer to test it running NFSD over SIFS. In some cases, you can run the NFS server over SIFS. There's some areas where you've only got an NFS client. Your NFS server needs to sit on SIFS to get to these $200 NAS boxes you buy at Fry's that are SIFS only. We added very large read support. Now, the Kerberos support is that sifs.spnego user space file. Simo and Jeff Layton and some others coded most of that. It's currently experimental. It requires putting the sifs.spnego file, which is in the Samba tree, which relatively harmless, easy to build, in a particular directory. We expect by 2.6.27, maybe 2.6.26, within the next month or so, I'll have the documentation written up for how to configure that. And I'll expect to see more distros by 2.6.27 when we take the experimental flag off actually shipping that. This was the number one feature request from the distros. Now, the DFS patch, all of it's there, but there's problems with one function, and so I'm not advertising the support for DFS. This patch was done largely by two people in Russia. One of the things that it allows us to do, though, is take advantage of some of the clustering support to better return alternate servers for recovery purposes and to hint at the least busy server for load balancing. So I think these are very exciting things. Let's see. Now, I should talk briefly about the Unix extensions. Now, I've given talks on that in the past, so I don't want to go into too much detail here. Originally, they were developed and documented by HP and SCO. They were very modest extensions, and they followed the principle of making the smallest changes possible to the protocol rather than rewriting the protocol from scratch. With the Unix extensions, sorry, without the Unix extensions, you see this problem. The upper is what the local file looks like. Here we're mounted on the same server over a loopback network connection, and you can see that the lower doesn't look at all like the upper window. The lower window is mounted over SIFS. Without the Unix extensions, the upper window is the local file itself, and what they should look the same. With the Unix extensions, of course, they do look the same. Go ahead.
Sorry, what's the actual bug then that causes the different visual representation?
Okay, so the bug that causes, what is the bug that causes the visual representation to be different?
The interoperability issue that makes it so that?
There's four or five that are shown here, but there's probably 20 or 30 that I could go through one by one. Among them are without these extensions, you can't tell a FIFO, a symlink. You can't tell the file type for those types of. You can tell a name pipe, of course, but you can't tell FIFOs and symlinks. You can't get the permissions back, the Unix mode back, unless you do approximations like we did with the SIFS-ACL, but that's fairly expensive operation to do, and even that isn't really the mode. In addition, you can't tell, let's see, what do we have here with typos and like, character devices, and there are various other issues. The owner fields are not exactly the same because typically Windows only fills in one of the owner fields. But I think that generally what you're seeing here is the file type is not as well expressed. You can't tell symlinks as well, and you can't get the mode bits. Now, there are ways to approximate that, like SFU has done, right? And so there's a number of SFU lessons, the services for Unix and services, the SUA, but it's not good enough. The byte range lock cases fail. And that's probably the single biggest problem right now, is that there are enough apps that expect POSIX byte range locking behavior that will always fail over SFU. But also, the semantics are pretty awkward for symlinks. They were awkward enough that Apple invented a fourth way to do symlinks with SIFS. And it's a little bit awkward for handling devices. And the UID mapping is a mess, partly because you don't have a group owner, but there's various reasons. And the performance is slow. I mean, if you tried to run Connect-a-thon test or something, you could see the performance difference fairly easily. And I think the one that bothers me the most, because as we talked about earlier, you have to have perfect semantics and perfect reliability because they expect it to work like your local file system. And when you have operations that are not atomic, when you have a series of six or seven operations that are required to achieve one user space operation, the opportunity for failure in the middle and landing in an indeterminate state is very high. So you need operations that can be mapped at least to, you know, one or two operations where possible. Now, there was a lot missing in the Unix extensions, and I don't want to go into too much detail about that, but we're more than happy to talk about that. So we added a lot to the Unix extensions, and last year we talked about the, this is what it looks like, getFACL and stat-f with and without the Unix extensions. Here's without the Unix extensions. And then with the Unix extensions, you can see the highlighted thing that's returned. The bold there was returned incorrectly, can't be returned correctly without a wire operation for POSIX ACLs and STATFS. Now, one of the things we've been exploring is mapping the POSIX ACLs onto Windows ACLs and vice versa. And that's been a topic that was discussed a lot at the NFS breakout meetings at Connect-a-thon the last 2 years. One of the interesting things about that is that there's sort of violent opinions of whether POSIX ACLs or Windows ACLs or NFS v4 ACLs are worth, which is the default for the system. Fortunately, NFS v4 ACLs are almost the same as SIFS ACLs, but they're not as fast as POSIX ACLs, which is a little bit annoying. And there's a couple other mapping issues that are very interesting to try to solve in that. But that's a topic that we're going to go into a lot more this year because we have now the mapping to the mode bits, and we now need to do the mapping from POSIX ACLs to Windows ACLs. The POSIX locking semantics Jeremy talked about last year, and I don't want to go into too much detail. I'm excited about this POSIX open create make dir, because remember when I mentioned operations should be atomic, you shouldn't have a POSIX make dir and then follow it with a chmod, basically, a set file info, because you've now broken an atomic operation into multiple pieces. You get more round trips, but you also have more opportunities for failure. The request of Apple, we added a who am I request, you know, basically tell me my SID and tell me this other information about the connection that I'm on. That actually turns out to be helpful for UID mapping. And Jeremy's going to talk about transport encryption in his talk. So how did we do on the roadmap from last year? Last year we said that 2.6.22 would include new make dir open. Yes, that happened. The encryption feature was developed, yes, but we only added to the server and to SMB client. We didn't add the encryption to the SIFS client yet. We continued some good discussions at the SNIA conference last year and at the Google conference on additional Unix extensions, and I think that's been very valuable. One of the things that's very helpful, the more implementers you have, it's amazing how much just adding one or two additional implementers does to improving what you thought was a reasonable spec to start out with. We still need to have a better way of handling POSIX error codes and returning those, because there are a few that have awkward mappings onto the NT status codes. We have wanted to talk with Microsoft in some detail about re-requesting OpLock and those features for reacquiring OpLock and also directory OpLock. So I was very glad in your talk that you discussed the directory OpLock issue. We've long thought that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we have to talk about new transports. Anybody ever heard of virtualization? Nobody talks about virtualization, right? One of the guys on our team, Rusty Russell, another Australian, well, he did this VirtIO transport, a faster shared memory transport, for communicating between virtual machines. Well, one of the guys I work with maintains the Plan 9 file system. Anybody remember the Plan 9 operating system from AT&T? They actually have a kind of a neat small file system that Linux supports that a lot of the HPC people use. But in virtualization, it's very nice. If you had config flags or if you had small amounts of data to share between your virtual instances, you want this high-performance transport underneath it. It acts differently. Now, go back to the Microsoft talk we just finished earlier this morning. A lot of the discussion was, how do you adapt the congestion control, framing, buffering, fragmentation, to deal with different transports underneath you, whether it's slow WAN links or faster gigabit connections. Well, you know, VirtIO behaves better in a lot of ways. A shared memory transport behaves a little better than TCP. But if you're trying to mount between virtual hosts, well, it's a lot easier to do with SIFS than it is with NFS. No RPC layer to get in the way. Now, we've talked about NFS version 4. I gave a presentation last year comparing SMB2, NFS v4, SIFS. I like the fact that there's no secrets. I mean, this is a very open protocol. Even in the NFS world, there are extensions that aren't documented out there. But I think that what I like best about SIFS is that this kitchen sink approach of, you know, you got all these features thrown in, you can negotiate hundreds of optional features, and we don't have that stupid RPC baggage, the Sun RPC baggage. We have different RPC baggage, we have DC RPC baggage, but that's not needed for the core file ops. And I think more importantly, if you look at this room, right, in this room we have a lot of Samba people, in this conference we have a lot of brilliant people, and when you look at other companies, not just Microsoft, I could tell you legendary stories about the guys staying up till 3 in the morning, you know, eating pizza and playing SimCity after they're doing their SMB builds for these Microsoft programmers, right? But also, if you look at the NetApp guys and a lot of the guys that have been in this for a long time, they're some geniuses. And of course, let's be fair, SIFS is a lot easier to configure. There are probably people in this room who have configured NFS v4 properly for Kerberos security and gotten all of the export stuff correct and have figured out how to, but it is a pain to get NFS v4 GSSX set up properly. You know, there's a lot behind setting up NFS version 4. You know, as much as we like to bash Microsoft unfairly sometimes, my son can set up a Windows 2003 domain controller, right? It sticks the CD in. My 11, 12-year-old son can do this. You know, you click Active Directory on the configuration panel, and you're pretty much done. You want DFS? Okay, you click DFS on the configuration panel. It's pretty easy. I challenge anyone here to set up NFS, the NFS equivalent of DFS, these referrals. Try setting up multiple NFS v4 servers and get referrals working. My 12-year-old can do this, you know, with either Samba or with Windows. So it is a lot easier. And let's talk about priorities on the client side. If I've ignored your patches, I apologize because I've been reading too much. But you know, we have a lot of documentation to digest and a lot of re-explaining to do to people who never heard of SMB and never heard of DC-RPC why this is actually useful. There's a tiny bit left, and the last 5% of the DFS patch needs a little bit of cleanup. We need to do more Kerberos testing, and we have to document that. I mean, it works, but I haven't added it to the administrative guide, and Jeff and Simo haven't sent me stuff for that. Or I guess it's in the Samba tree, you could do it. The POSIX open, we use the POSIX open for Makedir today, and that improved by doubled the performance. Now, POSIX open will get a similar, or actually a little bit bigger performance boost because we'll go from 3 operations down to 1 on open. That code is mostly done, but I haven't turned on yet. Large write support. Right now, Linux has an IOVEC of 14 frames, so we send this 56K write operation. The IOVEC is very, although it's a key structure, if I fake it and just make it a bigger number, performance increases 10 or 20% on sequential write, just right with that. Relatively easy change, but a little bit ugly the way I coded it, so I haven't checked that in. Okay, thoughts about SMB2. I like it. Now, one of the things that we need to do is get the Unix extensions reserved on SMB2, because that'll make it very easy. But, you know, we've complained for a long time about alignment. And it fixes alignment, and that really improves some of the esoteric architectures. One of the things you don't think about is that although we are running boring Intel or AMD or whatever processors here, there are a lot of people who aren't. And those guys who did the demonstration about open change, you know, those little embedded boxes are running the strangest processors, and Linux is meant to happily support, you know, 30 or 40 processor types. And some of these really do care about alignment. And SMB2 does a much better job about that. But what I like best about it is it's a smaller command set, it's terser, there's less redundancy. You know, I've been involved in a lot of the history, so I know why we have 20 versions of open and 5 versions of read, but I don't like it. It's hard to optimize. Okay.
What is the status of the client for SMB2? And I know that Kirch has got some SMB2 working in the before code base.
So what is the status of the SMB2 client? There is a user space, there's user space client code. It actually has been for a few years. I think at the SNEA conference a year and a half ago was when that was done. I was only vaguely involved in that. Tridge did most of that. There are test tools for SMB2. About a year and a half ago, I did some prototype work to just prove I could mount and do simple stuff. But I didn't take that prototype any farther for a couple reasons. One is I was just getting busy. I mean, 195 change sets is... I didn't do all of those, but I did over, you know, just reviewing all 195, right? That's enough to keep me busy full time, and this is, you know, I only do this with a third of my time.
One of the things that would be great is to, as you say, take the positive things forward, but honestly, you know, I don't think this should be done cooperatively, right? There's no way that we pull it off on our own.
Yeah, I think it would be very easy to take the Unix extensions and prototype at SMB2. I still have the code probably for the SMB2 client. It's actually smaller than the SMB client, the SIFS client, because there's fewer operations to deal with and there's less back level. It's a little bit harder in some ways because you have to open everything. You can't, there aren't as many path-based operations. But paradoxically, Linux file system developers think that looks cleaner. So it wouldn't receive much pushback. I had planned to do that anyway, even if the documentation hadn't come out. But once again, paradoxically, having the documentation come out prevented me from having time to do the prototype. But it turned out that most of what I needed I already knew, but what I needed to do it well I now have access to, which is very nice. You know, certainly we would accept one that would be submitted, but if I had to guess when the SMB2 client will have, I expect by 2.6.27 we'll have one checked in that's experimental, that'll, you know, mount and be able to read and write a file. Let's continue talking on Samba Technical and continue working on this update. Obviously, we have some meetings scheduled where we're going to go into more detail about the Unix extensions and some of these implementation details. And I'm looking forward to those. I also expect that at the SNEA conference this fall, we'll go through more with protocol extensions as we did last year. At both the Google conference and the SNEA conference last year, we had breakout meetings. At Connectathon, I'm going to give a talk specifically on the protocol part of the Unix extensions at Connectathon in a few weeks. And Jeremy will be there as well. We'll probably jointly present again. Let's see. I've only got about 1 minute left or 2 minutes left, but if anybody would like questions, I'd like to answer any questions you guys might have. Go ahead.
It's a technical one about one of your slides about the who am I. You're talking,
yes,
about the RPC to know after you connect which user are you exactly, right?
Yes, except it's not an RPC. It's a fundamental command. It's a query fs info, I believe. The reason that it wasn't an RPC was that in kernel we didn't want to add all of the code for DC RPC into kernel. So it's actually, you know, a transact2 subcommand.
Okay, and do you know, maybe the guys from Microsoft can tell to which version of SIFS or Microsoft Server it would be supported?
Now,
it's always a question whether they would close it or not.
Well, this is a good one to talk about with Microsoft. This subcommand is in the Unix reserved range, and it was added because Apple needed it badly. I enthusiastically agree about the need for it, and I think that it would be mildly useful even for Microsoft, but the specific reason it's more useful for non-Microsoft servers is if you have a UID but you don't know the guy's SID, this is helpful. Now, in the Microsoft case, you don't have a UID, so, I mean, your only identity is your SID, really. But it is sometimes helpful to for an authenticated SMB UID to return this. And for that reason, I think that it would have value for Microsoft to return it. Now, we can return, depending on flags passed into that call, we can decide whether the UID is returned or not, which form the UID is returned. Okay, again, thank you for your time. Feel free to email me, smfrench@gmail.com, or sfrench@samba.org. If you have questions. And hopefully next year, we will have all of the features that you guys asked for coded.